You sent us down a really interesting path looking at how economies actually function, and specifically diving deep into the market economic system. Think of this as your personal cheat sheet, you know, to understanding the core of how the system works. We're going to extract the key principles and some of the more surprising aspects from your materials, so you come away with a solid and maybe even exciting grasp of this fundamental economic structure.
Exactly. Yeah, your notes provide a great foundation for understanding what a market economy is really all about. Our goal in this deep dive is to, well, really unpack those core ideas for you, explore why they matter, and highlight both the impressive strengths and, you know, the inherent challenges of this way of organizing economic activity. We want to make complex ideas accessible and hopefully spark some real aha moments for you.
Okay, so at its heart, a market economy is about who makes the big decisions, what gets produced, how, and for whom. And in a market system, that power largely rests with individuals and businesses, right? Mm-hmm. That's the immediate contrast that jumps out when you think about something like a command economy, where the government is much more in control.
Yeah.
Here, it's this constant interaction between what we as consumers want and what businesses are willing to produce that, well, really drives everything.
Precisely. In a command economy, a central authority dictates those decisions from the top down. But in market economy, it's the self-interest, you know, of individuals and businesses that fuels the system. We as consumers are looking for the best value, the products and services that best meet our needs at a price we're willing to pay.
Right.
And businesses, in turn, are motivated to provide those things in a way that generates profit. This dynamic dance between our desires and their pursuit of profit is what determines the flow of goods and services and, crucially, establishes prices through supply and demand.
Which immediately brings up the idea that there are inherent trade-offs in this kind of system, doesn't it? Your notes point out that while a market economy can be incredibly efficient and offer a lot of freedom, it also has to grapple with the potential for significant inequality, and these things we call market failures. So it's a powerful engine, but it's not without its bumps in the road.
That's a very apt way to put it, yeah. And to really understand those trade-offs, we need to dig a bit deeper into the core characteristics that define a market economy. The first one that always stands out is private ownership of resources. What does that look like in the real world, and why is it so significant?
Well, it boils down to the fact that individuals and businesses have the legal right to own and control things like land, factories, and the tools and equipment needed to create goods and services. Think about a small business owner. They own their shop, their equipment, their inventory. And those property rights are fundamental because they give owners the autonomy, you know, to decide how to use those resources, to buy and sell them. With the government's direct involvement in those decisions being relatively limited, this encourages investment and careful management, right? If you own it, you have a strong incentive to take care of it and use it wisely.
Absolutely. When individuals and businesses have that ownership stake, they directly benefit from using those resources efficiently and productively. That leads us directly to the next key characteristic, the profit motive. Why is the desire to make a profit such a central cog in the machinery of a market economy?
Because the chance to make a profit is the big spark that ignites so much economic activity. Entrepreneurs are willing to take risks, you know, to invest their time and money in developing new products, improving existing ones, or finding more cost-effective ways to deliver goods and services, all with the underlying goal of earning a profit. It creates this sort of natural selection in the business world. Companies that effectively meet consumer needs and operate efficiently tend to thrive, while those that don't may struggle or even fail. It's a constant pressure for improvement.
Right, right. What's truly fascinating is how that pursuit of profit fuels the next characteristic, competition and innovation. How does that dynamic interplay between businesses all trying to succeed ultimately benefit us, the consumers?
Think about it. If multiple businesses are vying for your attention and your money, they have to find ways to stand out from the crowd. That often means offering better quality products, perhaps at more attractive prices, or with added features or convenience. This constant push to be better than the competition is what drives businesses to come up with new ideas, adopt new technologies, and streamline their operations. And for us, that translates into a wider range of choices and often lower prices over the long run, plus the excitement of new and improved goods and services constantly hitting the market.
And that intense competition is really powered by us, the consumers, right?
Mm.
That's the concept of consumer sovereignty. In a market economy, how much power do our choices really hold?
In a market economy, you, the consumer, are really in the driver's seat. Ultimately, your decisions about what you choose to buy, and just as importantly, what you choose not to buy, send powerful signals to businesses about what's in demand. If a company isn't producing goods or services that people want, they won't make sales and they won't be profitable. So, in a very real sense, your collective spending decisions guide where resources are allocated, ensuring that, ideally, the economy is producing what people actually desire. Your choices are the ultimate vote.
Now, this picture we've painted so far is largely one of a system with a limited role for government. Your notes mention this as another key characteristic. In an ideal, purely free market, what's the envisioned role for government?
In theory, yeah, the government's role is meant to be quite minimal, primarily acting as a kind of impartial referee. This includes enforcing contracts, protecting private property rights, and generally maintaining law and order so that businesses can operate with some certainty. The underlying belief is that the market, left largely to its own devices, is generally the most efficient way to allocate resources. However, as your notes also acknowledge, in reality, governments almost always play a more active role through regulations designed to prevent monopolies, ensure fair competition, and step in to address situations where the market on its own doesn't produce desirable outcomes for society as a whole.
Which leads us nicely to the potential advantages of this system. Let's start with the idea of efficient allocation of resources. How does a market economy, at least in theory, manage to direct resources to where they're most needed and valued?
It all circles back to those price signals we talked about. Prices act like incredibly efficient messengers, conveying information about what's in high demand and what's not. If lots of people want a particular product, the price tends to rise. That higher price then signals to producers that there's an opportunity to make more profit by increasing production of that item. So resources, raw materials, labor, capital are naturally drawn towards those areas where they can generate the most value for consumers. It's a very dynamic and responsive system.
And alongside that potential for efficiency, there's also a significant degree of economic freedom inherent in a market economy, isn't there? What does that freedom look like in practical terms for both individuals and businesses?
For you as an individual, it means having a wide range of choices when it comes to your career, where you want to work, and how you want to spend your hard-earned money.
Yeah.
You have the freedom to start your own business if you have an idea and the drive. For businesses, they have the flexibility to innovate, to explore new strategies, and to expand or change direction in response to market conditions. It's a much more adaptable and less constrained environment compared to more centrally planned economies.
And we've touched on it, but it's worth emphasizing again the powerful incentives for innovation and technological progress that are embedded in a market economy. How does the pursuit of profit continually push things forward?
Well, the desire to not just make a profit, but to make more profit than your competitors is a huge motivator. Businesses are constantly seeking ways to gain an edge, and often that involves developing new and improved products, discovering more efficient production methods, or even creating entirely new markets. This relentless drive for innovation leads to the development of new technologies, increases in productivity, and ultimately a general improvement in our overall standard of living over time. Think about the rapid advancements we've seen in technology. A lot of that is fueled by the competitive drive for profit.
Definitely. And as consumers, we certainly experience the result of that competition in the sheer variety of goods and services that are readily available to us. Why does a market economy tend to generate such a diverse range of options?
Because businesses are all trying to capture different segments of the market and appeal to a wide array of tastes and preferences. If there's a demand for something, no matter how niche, there's likely to be someone who sees an opportunity to make a profit by providing it. This leads to a much more diverse marketplace, with options to cater to virtually every need and desire you can imagine.
Finally, one of the more intriguing advantages often cited is the self-regulating mechanism of a market economy. How does this system tend to correct itself without the need for a central authority constantly intervening?
It's the magic of supply and demand in action, really. If, for example, there's a sudden surge in demand for a particular product, the price will likely rise. That higher price then acts as a signal to producers to increase their supply. Conversely, if there's an oversupply of something and not enough demand, the price will tend to fall, which encourages producers to scale back their production. This continuous adjustment of prices acts as an automatic feedback loop, helping to keep supply and demand relatively in balance without requiring direct government control.
But, as we hinted at earlier, this system isn't without its inherent problems. Let's delve into some of the key disadvantages and potential pitfalls that your notes highlight. Income inequality is often cited as a major concern in market economies. Why does this tend to be more pronounced in these systems?
Well, yeah, in a market economy, the distribution of wealth and income isn't predetermined. People have varying levels of access to resources, to education and training, and to capital. Some individuals possess skills that are in high demand, while others may face more limited opportunities. This can lead to significant disparities in income and wealth, where some individuals and groups become very affluent, while others struggle to meet basic needs like housing, food, and healthcare. This inequality can be a persistent challenge and raise questions about fairness and social mobility.
And then there's the important issue of market failures. Your notes specifically mention the public goods problem. What exactly are public goods, and why does the market often struggle to provide them adequately on its own?
Right. Public goods have two key characteristics. They're non-excludable, meaning it's difficult or impossible to prevent people from benefiting from them, even if they don't pay for them.
Okay.
And they are non-rivalrous, meaning one person's consumption of the good doesn't reduce its availability for others. Think of national defense or a public park, because it's difficult to charge individuals directly for their use. Because one person's enjoyment doesn't diminish another's, there's often no strong profit incentive for private companies to provide these goods. As a result, the market may underprovide them or not provide them at all, even though they might be essential for society.
That makes sense. Your notes also point to externalities as another significant type of market failure. What are externalities, and what kind of negative consequences can they create in a market that's left completely unregulated?
Externalities are essentially the unintended side effects of production or consumption that affect third parties who aren't directly involved in the transaction. A classic negative externality is pollution from a factory. The factory making the product doesn't necessarily bear the full cost of that pollution the surrounding community does, through things like health problems and environmental damage. Because these external costs aren't reflected in the market price of the goods produced, there can be an overproduction of goods that generate negative externalities.
I see. Another concern that often arises in market economies is the tendency for some industries to become dominated by monopolies or a small number of large players, leading to reduced competition. Why does this happen, and what are the potential downsides for consumers and the overall economy?
Well, in certain industries, due to factors like high startup costs or network effects, it can be more efficient for a single firm or a few large firms to control a significant share of the market. Additionally, some companies might actively try to eliminate their competition through various means to gain more market power. When this happens, these dominant firms can potentially charge higher prices, reduce innovation because they face less pressure to improve, and offer fewer choices to consumers compared to a more competitive environment.
Mm. Finally, your notes touch on the issue of economic instability as a potential drawback of market economies. Why are these systems sometimes prone to cycles of booms and busts, and what are the implications?
Yeah, market economies are inherently dynamic and can be influenced by a wide range of factors, from changes in consumer confidence and technological disruptions to global economic events. This can lead to periods of rapid economic growth or booms, but these can sometimes be unsustainable and followed by periods of contraction or busts, resulting in things like increased unemployment and financial uncertainty. Issues like inflation, where the general price level rises, or deflation, where it falls, can also create instability and make it more difficult for businesses and individuals to make sound economic decisions.
So we've explored the definition, the key characteristics, the potential advantages, and some of the significant disadvantages of a market economic system. Now, let's focus on this crucial concept of efficiency within this context. Your notes break it down into three distinct types: productive, allocative, and dynamic. Let's start with productive efficiency. What does it mean for an economy to be productively efficient?
Productive efficiency is really about getting the most bang for your buck, maximizing output with a given amount of inputs, or producing a certain level of output using the fewest possible resources. Think of a factory that's productively efficient. It's using the best available technology and management techniques to produce goods at the lowest possible cost. It's about operating on that production possibility frontier, meaning you can't produce more of one good without sacrificing the production of another, given your current resources and technology. It's all about minimizing waste and maximizing resource utilization.
Okay. And how does allocative efficiency build upon or differ from that idea of productive efficiency?
Allocative efficiency takes it a step further. It's not just about producing goods and services cheaply. It's about producing the right goods and services, the ones that consumers actually value the most. It's about aligning production with consumer demand in a way that maximizes overall societal well-being. In theory, this occurs when the price of a good or service is equal to the marginal cost of producing it, meaning that the value consumers place on that last unit produced is exactly equal to the cost of making it. It's about making sure we're producing what people want in the quantities they desire.
Right, aligning supply with actual demand. And finally, we have dynamic efficiency. This sounds like it's focused on the long-term evolution and improvement of the economy.
Exactly. Dynamic efficiency is all about improvements in efficiency over time. It's driven by things like innovation in products and processes, investments in research and development, and the adoption of new technologies. This kind of efficiency leads to the development of better quality goods and services, lower production costs in the long run, and ultimately contributes to sustained economic growth and a higher standard of living. It's really the engine of long-term progress in market economies.
Now, when we discuss a market economy, it's important to remember that in the real world, we rarely encounter a purely free market. There's almost always some degree of interaction and overlap between the public and private sectors. Could you briefly define what we mean by each of these sectors?
Sure. The public sector essentially encompasses all the organizations that are owned and controlled by the government. This includes everything from national defense and law enforcement to public education and healthcare, as well as infrastructure like roads and bridges. These services are typically funded through taxation. On the other hand, the private sector is made up of businesses and organizations that are owned and operated by individuals or corporations with the primary goal of making a profit. This sector is characterized by competition and includes a vast array of industries like retail, technology, manufacturing, and finance.
And as your notes correctly point out, the vast majority of economies we see in practice are mixed economies. This means that both the public and private sectors play significant and often interconnected roles. Why has this blended approach become the dominant model?
Well, it's largely a response to the inherent strengths and weaknesses of a pure market system that we've been discussing. While market economies excel at things like efficiency and innovation, they can also lead to issues like significant inequality and the underprovision of essential public goods. Governments often step in to try and mitigate these downsides, to provide a safety net, and to guide the market towards outcomes that are considered more socially desirable. It's about trying to harness the power of the market while addressing its limitations.
And your notes outline some of the key roles that governments play in guiding the market in these mixed economies. Let's touch on some of the most significant ones. One important function is regulating monopolies. Why is government intervention often deemed necessary in this area?
As we discussed earlier, monopolies can stifle competition, potentially leading to higher prices, reduced innovation, and less choice for consumers. Therefore, governments often implement antitrust laws and establish regulatory agencies to prevent the formation of monopolies or to oversee the behavior of existing ones, ensuring they don't abuse their market power to the detriment of consumers and the broader economy. The goal is to maintain a competitive marketplace.
Another crucial role for government is ensuring fair competition more broadly, even beyond just preventing monopolies. How do they attempt to achieve that level playing field?
This involves enforcing a range of laws and regulations that prohibit anti-competitive practices like price fixing, collusion among competitors, and other actions that could unfairly disadvantage smaller businesses or harm consumers. The aim is to create an environment where businesses compete based on the quality and efficiency of their products and services, rather than through unfair or manipulative tactics.
We also discussed the challenge of providing public goods through the market mechanism alone. What essential role does the government typically play in this domain?
Because the market often fails to adequately provide essential but non-profitable goods and services like national defense, basic scientific research, and public infrastructure like roads, bridges, and sanitation systems. The government typically steps in to fund and provide these through public spending, often financed by taxation. These are goods that are considered vital for society's well-being, but wouldn't necessarily be provided in sufficient quantities by the private sector alone.
Right. And then there's the issue of correcting negative externalities, such as pollution. What tools do governments employ to try and address these market failures?
Governments have a variety of tools at their disposal to deal with negative externalities. These can include imposing taxes on activities that generate pollution, setting regulations that limit the amount of emissions allowed, or even establishing market-based mechanisms like cap-and-trade systems. The underlying principle is to try and internalize these external costs to make the polluter, for example, bear some of the financial burden of the environmental damage they cause. This encourages more responsible behavior and helps to align private costs with social costs.
Okay, makes sense. Finally, your notes highlight the government's role in attempting to maintain overall economic stability. What kinds of policies do they use to try and manage fluctuations in things like inflation and unemployment?
Governments typically use a combination of monetary policy, which is usually managed by a central bank, involves tools like adjusting interest rates and controlling the money supply, and fiscal policy, which involves the government's decisions about spending and taxation. The goal of these policies is to try and smooth out the business cycle, keep inflation at a manageable level, promote full employment, and foster sustainable economic growth. It's about trying to moderate the peaks and troughs of the economic cycle.
So as we bring this deep dive into the market economic system to a close, it's clear from your materials that it's a system brimming with potential strengths, the efficiency it can foster in allocating resources, the significant economic freedom it offers, and the powerful incentives it creates for innovation are certainly key among them.
Absolutely. But it's equally clear that it's a system that presents some significant challenges, most notably the inherent risk of income inequality and the various types of market failures that can arise. It's a constantly evolving landscape, and there's an ongoing discussion in most market economies about where to strike the right balance between the dynamism of individual initiative and the necessity of government oversight to ensure a prosperous and equitable society.
And that leads us to our final point for you to consider. Reflecting on these inherent trade-offs within a market economy, the constant interplay between the pursuit of efficiency, the striving for greater equity, and the value placed on individual freedom, which single aspect do you believe should be given the highest priority in shaping economic policy in the years ahead? And what are the reasons behind your choice? It's a multifaceted question without any easy answers, but hopefully our discussion today has provided you with a richer understanding of the complexities involved and will encourage you to explore these different perspectives further.